we welcome in the managing editor of Hardball Times, writer-editor for Fangraphs and Boston.com, Paul Swiden, back with us. Paul, welcome in.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Going great. How are you doing?
Hanging in there.
Cheering for your BU Terriers as they made it into the NCAA field. You would have done better, Paul, if they'd just taken care of those Eagles.
They would have. That was a rough game.
Well, listen, hey, you were there. You're in the field, so it's not going too badly for the Terriers.
No, they're doing good so far today. So hopefully they just got to bring it home in the third period.
What's the score?
It's 1-1 after two.
Ooh, very nice. Very nice. All right, well, let's talk a little baseball and start with the Red Sox and the changes to the batting order. Proof to you, it would appear that John Farrell, again, is a bit lost in this job.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I'm going to investigate further in the coming days. But my feeling is that the fourth at bat of the game, potentially, you know, the other team being able to stack relievers on one side or the other, does not outweigh putting your best hitters in the lineup toward the top of the lineup for the first three at bats of the game. And I think, you know, Xander Bogaerts is a much better hitter than Mitch Moreland, and there's really no excuse for having him bat behind him in the lineup, but we'll see. I think before too long, Xander will be back towards the top of that lineup.
I like the Mitch Moreland acquisition. He's got a good power stroke. He seems to have a bat designed for Fenway to take advantage of the Green Monster, but he's a guy who's always struggled to get a batting average much above the 240, 250 range.
Yeah, and he never really is a big on base percentage guy either. He's perfectly capable of hitting home runs, but he doesn't do too much other than that. He's got a better glove than Hanley at first base, but he's a guy that on this team should be hitting at the bottom of the lineup.
And is a little too much pressure for a young guy like Andrew Benintendi, who never even played at AAA, to be up there in the number two slot where so much is expected?
You know, I want to say it's not too much pressure, given that, you know, he did play in the postseason last year. He didn't seem phased. But, you know, at the same time, he's still a bit of an unknown quantity. And, you've got four or five really great hitters in that lineup. So it just seems like something you don't need to do. Now, if they really think, you know, he's the next Carl Yastrzemski, great. That would be fantastic, but it doesn't seem like something that needs to be done on opening day.
So overall, how good do you think this team can be, Paul?
I think it honestly depends on Price and Pomeranz and the rotation staying together. As we've been hearing all spring, the team doesn't have much rotation depth. That was certainly a curious decision. The front office sort of made all their acquisitions in December and then took the rest of the winter off. I think if they're healthy, this is a 95 win team. It'll really just depend on how the rotation shakes out. And I'm interested to see, because every other spot, basically, except really for third base and catcher, are known quantities and are good quantities. So it's a good team.
We're talking with Paul Swiden of Hardball Times here on Downtown. As you look around Major League Baseball, Paul, what is the most scarce commodity among Major League teams?
Honestly, right now, it's either catchers or left fielders. My article for Fangraphs this week was ranking every team's left fielder group. And left field really is the worst position in the game right now, offensively, other than maybe catcher. And, you know, catchers are always tough to come by. But left field has been a real black hole the last 10 years or so since Barry Bonds retired.
Why is that? Can you think of any real reason why it would be that way?
I think part of it is the acceptance that defense is important in the outfield. It kind of started with Brett Gardner when he really came up with the Yankees, and I think a lot of teams sort of follow that route. Alex Gordon is more of a defense guy than an offense guy. But no, not really. I think overall it's just kind of one of those cyclical things, and it'll turn around eventually.
We've seen a little resurgence in power the last couple of seasons. Is that here to stay?
I think so. I think more and more I'm coming around to the theory that the ball was not juiced last year. It's just that teams, as they have more of the StatCast data, more of this objective data on launch angle and exit velocity, are really teaching their players to swing up on the ball instead of swing flat or down on the ball. And I think that is what drove the increase in power starting, I think it was like August of 2015 through to where we are now, to the point where you see superstar hitters like Josh Donaldson tweeting out pictures of themselves saying, just say no to ground balls. You know, when an MVP says that, the other guys on the team are going to take that seriously. So I think that's here to stay.
Red Sox, as you mentioned, made all their moves early, maybe better than they were last year. What team would you say has improved themselves the most in the offseason?
That's a good question. I think the Cubs did good to get the closer that they thought they needed. I think Houston had a good offseason getting Beltran and some of those other guys. But there's not really a team that sticks out to me as saying, like, wow, they're going to be like, you know, 10, 15 games better than they were last year. I don't really see that team. Every team is sort of within five or so wins of where they were last year. So there wasn't a dramatic shift, I don't think, between last year and this year. Obviously, that's, you know, at the end, when we look up in October, someone will have improved or not improved by that large degree, but it's hard to say at this point.
Baseball fans, the old guard, coming around a little bit when it comes to accepting of the new analytics in baseball and realizing that some of the old numbers don't mean all that much. From your perspective, what's the most important analytic that's been developed in recent years to provide a good assessment of players' skills and a good predictor of what they can do?
Well, and in terms of it's predictor is always a lot harder, but in terms of an assessment of what they can do, I do think the StatCast data is very important because it's intuitive. Like when you talk to someone about launch angle, like launch angle is maybe a wonky way to phrase it, but when you say to guys, hey, if you swing this way, you're going to get better results than if you swing that way, that's very easy for them to understand and process versus something like wins above replacement, which is a complex calculation that most people that use it don't even know the full calculation. Myself included, I couldn't tell you what the calculation is. I think in terms of predictor, we're not all the way there yet with those kind of stats, but we have seen things like spin rate be a good predictor for maybe guys that you can teach a couple other things. In other words, like a guy like Seth Lugo on the Mets, like he's got a really great spin rate. If you can figure that out early enough in the player development process, you can kind of look to those guys as guys you can nurture and maybe pay a little bit more attention to and maybe get some more success out of them as they progress.
Paul, I've got a little rotisserie baseball draft coming up next weekend. Who are a couple of guys that you think are poised to have a breakout season?
My big one is Greg Bird on the Yankees, sorry to say. he was a guy who missed all of last year with, I believe, a shoulder injury. But he's back now. He's hit like 7 home runs in spring training. Not that that's an indicator that he's going to have a good year, but it's an indicator that he's healthy. And he was doing very well before he got hurt. And now with a full year of playing time, I think he's definitely someone to watch out for. Another person to watch out for in Chicago, if their closer does get hurt in Wade Davis, another person to watch out for would be Carl Edwards Jr., who was really good last year except for a couple of games. And if he's able to iron those sorts of things out, that would help. And, you know, I do think Benintendi is a guy to watch for in the later rounds. He's got a lot of hype, so he'd probably go earlier in your draft than you should be taking him. But if he slips, you know, to the 11th, 12th round, he's a guy you should snap up for sure.
Always love talking baseball with you, Paul. Thanks for being with us, and we look forward to chatting with you throughout the course of the season.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Paul Swiden, the Hardball Times, Fangraphs, and Boston.com on Downtown.